Hello, everybody. This is Scott Yates, Director of Communications and Producer Relations for the Washington Grain Commission, here with episode 99 of Wheat All About It, or what I'm calling Howard Nelson's Hunt, seeking the elusive Eastern Washington alternative crop. About my conversation with Nelson in his Reardon office on October 24th. Nelson's title is Manager of Member and Special Services for Highline Grain, but he's perhaps best known as the agronomist who has been searching for crops that will complement and profit from being grown in a rotation with wheat. I probably interviewed Nelson a dozen times over the years about various facets of Pacific Northwest agriculture. We're not close friends, but we're friendly, and he has always been helpful whenever I had questions about his work. For most of his adult life, Nelson's work has involved what are known as alternative crops. After graduating from Washington State University with a degree in agronomy, he started out in Kentucky bluegrass, went into wrinkled seed peas, and spent time in the canola industry before working for a couple of cooperatives. He even went back to his family's farm for 10 years. 20 years ago, however, he was hired by Central Washington grain growers specifically to investigate crops other than wheat that farmers in the cooperative's region might be able to grow. He has continued that quest on a larger scale since Central Washington grain growers merged with four other businesses in 2016 to form Highline Grain. Like a university, he has access to small plot equipment, including a planter, sprayer, and combine, that he uses to evaluate crops before trying them on a larger scale. For me, Nelson's varied career reveals a lot about how his bosses perceive his expertise and low-key style. He is obviously a man for whom others see a capacity for hard work, not to mention a hard head, a requisite for the task of finding a suitable alternative in the region. Consider an incomplete list of crops Nelson has investigated. Camelina, corn, sunflower, safflower, mustard, millet, canola, triticale, fall-planted peas, and garbanzo beans. Most have passed by the wayside, but we'll talk ahead about four alternative crops that appear to be ready for their moment in the spotlight. A brief aside, one of the alternatives Nelson investigated, a genetically altered safflower that synthesized insulin, made such an impression on me when I was a reporter that I bought stock in the Canadian company developing it. Alas, the plants didn't synthesize enough insulin to make it a profitable venture. I asked Nelson if he looks at alternative crops and their agronomic and economic performance as individuals or as part of a larger system.
Yeah, so it's a cropping system, you know, because everything has to work together to make it work. And in some areas, the cropping system is winter wheat fallow. You know, that's the whole cropping system. In other areas, it's winter wheat, garbanzo beans, spring wheat. Maybe it's winter wheat fallow, fall planted peas. So my whole approach is it's a cropping system. You know, if you grow one crop continually, like winter wheat, eventually you know, get problems, diseases and such. And a lot of these things can be controlled just simply with crop rotation. You know, growing another crop, letting that pathogen, you know, decline to where maybe it's not an economic issue. And then when you go back to that crop, you don't have to worry about those disease issues. You know, we spend millions of dollars in wheat breeding. A lot of that can be handled with crop rotation. And so that's our whole approach, is it's kind of a holistic approach. And as a company, if a grower is going to grow a crop, we want to make sure we can market that crop, because that's the big difference between us and a university. You know, a university can develop, you know, crops and other things. But when it comes to marketing, you have to go to private industry or a co-op such as we are.
At the last Washington Grain Commission meeting, Dana Herron, a commissioner, suggested that winter pulses are going to revolutionize the industry. Do you think so?
I do. We've got a few marketing issues right now to work through, but as far as the crop rotation, you know, we've seen up to a 30% increase in winter wheat yields following fall planted peas. And then we also get the nitrogen mineralization out of the peas. So it's kind of a double benefit because you can lower your fertility expenses because of the nitrogen the peas return to the soil. And at the same time, you get a 30% higher yield. So you lower your costs and get a higher yield of winter wheat following the peas. So it's a huge rotational benefit that we don't have out in the drier, you know, wheat fallow areas of eastern Washington.
So are we just talking about winter peas, or are there winter lentils, winter garbs?
There are some winter lentils that we're looking at. The winter hardiness is not there yet in some of the winter lentil varieties. And then the other problem we have with winter lentils is they're about 10 inches tall. So it's pretty hard to harvest a really short crop like that. So there, you know, I'm sure they'll continue to work to develop some varieties. Right now, we don't have anything. As far as a winter garb, Rebecca McGee at USDA ARS in Pullman has some material that she's looking at. I haven't seen it yet, but she does talk about a winter garb in the future.
Now, with regard to the winter peas, are these Austrian winter peas, green peas?
Yeah, so you'll notice I call them fall planted peas. Rebecca McGee calls them autumn sown. We try to make the distinction between these peas and Austrian winter pea because Austrian winter pea is has a black seed coat. It has a purple bloom when it blooms. And so it has tannins in it, so it has a bitter taste to it. The varieties we are working with are the yellow and the green market classes. So they have white flowers. You know, we don't quite have food quality in these varieties yet, but we're close. We have material in our test plots that look really good. We haven't had a hard winter on them yet, so we're not sure of the winter hardiness of the new material that we're looking at. But we're right on the edge of having a true food grade yellow and green market classes of fall planted peas.
And what does that mean, food grade types? What are these peas going to go into?
We want them to be no difference in appearance from a spring type. And so the spring types have a clear seed coat, so you can see the cotyledon color. And then they're fairly large in size. Right now, our peas for the fall planted varieties are smaller, and they have a ghost modeling on the seed coat.
Where is the market for these peas? Is this an export market? Is this a domestic market?
Yeah, so our goal is to not rely on any one market for all of our crop. So we have sold a lot domestically, specifically into the pet food markets. And we have sold for export, and then we have sold them as split peas for government food aid. So the goal is to have a crop that you can move into in numerous avenues for marketing. But we have relied a lot on the pet food market in the domestic market last year especially.
And I read that recently the Food and Drug Administration started an investigation looking at grain-free pet food diets and suggested that using too many pulses could have a detrimental effect on dogs in particular. Can you update me on where things stand now?
Yeah, so the U.S. Dry and Pea and Lentil Council, when this came out, approached FDA to get some more information on their press release they put out because they specifically mentioned pulse crops, peas, chickpeas, lentils, in feed rations that affected I can't remember what the disease is called.
Affected their hearts.
Yeah, it was acute. Anyway. But they had an incidence of, 50 dogs out of, the 9 million dogs in the United States. So we felt it was a little premature to specifically call out an ingredient as causing this without any further research. And so they're continuing to look at it. A lot of the formulations are deficient in an amino acid. And so we feel it's more of a formulation problem, that when it's taurine, when they add the taurine to the formulation, then these symptoms in these dogs go away. Kind of a weird thing is some of the pet food mixes that they identified as causing these problems also had kangaroo meat in them. And so I don't, you know, we like to think that maybe it was the kangaroo meat, not the, not the Pol's crops, but it could be a combination of the two products in the formulation.
What is the price of fall sown peas?
Yeah, the fall planted peas to the grower were at about 8 cents right now, which is not good. Mm-hmm. But and movement is slow even at that price.
What is a reasonable price? What is going to get farmers to really look seriously at growing fall sown peas?
Yeah, so we need to be up in that 9, 10, 11 cent range. We've had some excellent yields in the fall planted peas, almost 7,000 pounds per acre on dry land.
Whoa.
In the Ritzville area. And we can grow the crop. We just need to get these market issues straightened out. And so we have our acres are up this fall on the fall planted peas. And so, that, you know, we've got a year to go. So we've got a year for the market to kind of get things straightened out, maybe some of these trade issues behind us. And so then, you know, I'm pretty optimistic because, you know, pea acres are going to be down, but we're going to have peas to market next fall. So I'm pretty optimistic that we'll be working through this supply-demand problem that we're in right now.
So when I first started reporting on agriculture in 1986, canola was going to be the next big thing. Fast forward more than 30 years, where does the canola industry stand in the region today?
Yeah, well, canola is finally getting some legs under it. You know, I blame a lot of that on we weren't told how to grow it correctly. It takes a whole different management to grow canola than in any other crop, you know, because it's a small seed, has to be planted shallow in moisture for winter canola. We seldom have moisture shallow, you know. So, that, you know, people said, oh, you can get around that by planting it in July. Well, that's, you can get a stand of canola, but you'd get these huge plants you know, the winter hardiness would drop off. And then you'd have all the fertility in your leaves, and then the leaves would die and you'd lose your fertility. So, you know, we finally changed the way we grow canola. We plant it later. We want a small plant between 4 and 6 inches in size. We stream jet our fertilizer on in the fall. Instead of getting it all in the leaves, we try to keep it in the soil. So when the plant grows in the spring, it's there.
And I heard that we had a good canola crop this year. Was that the winter canola crop?
Yeah, it was the winter canola crop was better than the spring canola crop.
How many acres were out there, do you think? Or what kind of production did we have?
Yeah, it's hard to get a figure on that because they don't do production estimates on canola as well as they do wheat. But the canola acres in Washington set, 70,000 acres, I believe. And we actually set a yield record for canola in the state. And most of that was from the winter canola acres. So spring canola yields weren't as high this year as they were last year.
We now have a crushing plant in Warden for canola. Has that been a game changer?
Yeah. So we have an active market, you know, with daily posted prices, you know, reasonable logistics and, you know, lower freight costs to get it there. And, you know, Viterra has been an active buyer. And, you know, the prices have been high enough to where it provides a good return to the growers. And it compares more favorably right now than winter wheat as far as gross revenue.
And what are we looking at in terms of prices?
Their delivered price is around $17 a hundredweight. They pay a non-GMO premium. So if you grow the non-GMO types, you get another $1.50 a hundredweight. And so locally, that's, you know, we're somewhere in the 16 cent per pound range. Mm-hmm. And with the yields that the growers have been getting, you know, it pencils out very well. That Elmira Heartline area, we've seen some huge growth in acreage in that area specifically. And some guys are actually growing half winter wheat, half winter canola on their farms, which is a big shift, you know, from the past. You know, a lot of guys would maybe plant 100 acres of winter canola, and the majority was winter wheat, but we've seen a big shift.
And there's a boost to the subsequent wheat crop, correct?
Well, it all depends on who you talk to, because I have heard some people say that the canola takes more moisture out of the ground. So it kind of depends on the season you get following canola. If you get the recharge, then the yields are comparable. But if you hit a drier year, there is a slight decrease following canola.
Uh-huh. Okay. So triticale is an alternative that got a lot of press a few years ago in eastern Washington, but I haven't heard much about it lately. Where does triticale as a viable alternative stand?
Yeah, so triticale is a crop that's been around a long time. We have newer varieties now that are quite different from the varieties that were out in the 1980s, and they've improved for test weight, a lot of other qualities. Triticale is probably the crop that is the most easy to grow because it is such a vigor. It has that rye background in it, and so it'll grow, you know, in your poor soils. It'll do really well if you have low pH problems. It doesn't affect triticale like it does winter wheat, but it has that rye background that people are concerned about. And you know, they're afraid it's going to become a weed like rye. And we don't have that problem with these varieties. Right now, the triticale market follows the price of corn. And so the price is down right now. So there's not a lot of incentive to grow triticale over winter wheat, with the exception if you have a low pH field that you want to grow a crop. We found that when you take CRP out, the triticale does better that first year than winter wheat does. And so there's a real advantage to growing triticale in that. And then we have a new variety that we're coming out with called Frito, and it's shown a higher yield than the variety that we've been growing. So maybe we will be able to grow triticale even at these low prices and compete with winter wheat. I like to call triticale our dryland corn for eastern Washington because, you know, it's not uncommon to have 120 bushel per acre. You know, and the guys with the combine monitors, they'll go through areas, it'll go up to 200, you know, bushels an acre. So
on what kind of precipitation?
Oh, in the 10 to 12 inch rainfall zones.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where is it being marketed now?
So we market it, you know, the majority of it still goes to the chicken industry, the layers and the broilers. Some of it does go into the food market. You know, a lot of, you know, like your Dave's, you know, bread, you'll look on there, it'll have triticale as one of the ingredients. So it'll have some triticale in it. And then there's some health food companies that we sell to that they use, they make a triticale flour. And people say it makes a great pancake. I've never had it, but it's on one of my lists to try.
All right, your bucket list for retirement.
Yeah.
Does Highland Grain have a pool for marketing triticale?
No, you know, we usually start our crops in a pool until we we get the markets established. We haven't had a pool on triticale for, it'd have to be about 2006.
Do you have a pool for the winter peas?
Yeah. So the fall planted peas are in a marketing pool where the grower gets the average price that we receive. We have large garbs this year, a new variety called Royal, and that's also in a marketing pool. Mm-hmm. It's when you have a crop, when you have limited buyers, you have to have the ability to sell as much of that crop when that buyer is in the market. And we found that a marketing pool just gives us that advantage to do that.
With regard to growing the spring garbs out here, what kind of precipitation zone do we need?
Yeah, so spring garbs were probably 13 inches to 18 inches here. We have grown them a little bit down in the Wilbur area, which is 12-inch zone. And it's a little variable on yields there, but we have pretty good yields in this Davenport-Reardon area. Growers have been pretty happy to have a crop like garbs because as a spring crop, you know, it has a higher revenue until this year.
Yes, this was a bad year.
This may be the year that we finally killed the garb market, it's been a good run right until now.
Mm-hmm. And that was caused by worldwide impacts, wasn't it? I mean, didn't India have some kind of impact on the garb market?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. So the India tariff embargo hurts. But then at the same time, our acreage just shot up in the U.S. and Canada. And so when you have a crop that has a lower usage than a crop like wheat or corn, it's pretty easy to overproduce that if you're not too careful.
Is there a critical mass of acres needed for an alternative crop to make sense?
Yeah, especially from the marketing side, because we work to develop these markets. And so, if you have product to sell them, that's great. But if the next year, if you don't have product to sell, then you can lose those markets that you've worked to develop. So it is very important to have product and consistent amounts of product, which has been hard on the triticale because the acres do fluctuate quite a bit from year to year.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you've been in this area for all of your life. Now, I'm told that meteorologists say that we're getting more spring moisture and that there is less of a chance for Arctic outbreaks in the winter. Are you seeing the effects of a changing climate on the alternatives you grow?
Yeah, that's a pretty hot topic. Climate change, you know, the climate deniers and all that. It's hard to separate out just natural variability from that. And I can't say one way or another if we have climate change or if we don't. We haven't lost a winter wheat crop since about 1986 or 7.
You know, 1991 was the last widespread, yeah.
Yeah. And we used to think we'd lose a crop every 1 out of 10 years, right?
Yes.
So, and a lot of that is varieties. L10 came out about that same time, and it has extremely good winter hardiness. So it's hard to say, you know, whether it is or isn't.
I tend to think climate change is happening, but based on my readings, I also think the Pacific Northwest will actually benefit, at least in the short term. More intense spring rains and less concern about Arctic outbreaks could alter the crop rotations we're able to use here. It could turn out that a lot of the groundwork Nelson has supplied in researching alternative crops will be put to use after he retires. Speaking of which, the R word, that is retirement, was mentioned by Nelson during our conversation, but it's not going to happen for a while. Meanwhile, it appears Highline Grain will continue to support research on alternative crops, having placed former WSU Variety Testing Director Ryan Higginbotham alongside Nelson to learn as much from him as he can. In the section of our conversation talking about pulses in pet food diets and the heart problem the FDA has flagged as a result, you heard Nelson mention 50 dogs out of 9 million had been affected. Actually, there's more than 90 million dogs in the U.S., not nine. I hope you enjoyed episode 99, or what I called Howard Nelson's Hunt, seeking the elusive Eastern Washington alternative crop. About my conversation with Nelson, who has spent almost his entire career working with or evaluating alternative crops in a wheat rotation. Join Mike Karstensen here next week for the 100th episode of Wheat All About It, as the Washington Grain Commissioner takes on podcast duties when he interviews the interviewer. His title for an interview of yours truly, Scott Yates, right here on Wheat All About It.
You think we're simple, you think we're not right. Look at your cities and ask yourself who's right. We've got country and you've got crime. We've got green and you've got grime. Let there be no doubt, we have what it takes to till the soil until our back aches. Just give us a break and don't be so rude. We love the work and you love the food.
We feed you.